You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody. It is hour two of the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. And our discussion of something that strikes at the heart of every Wisconsin family's well-being is our focus for the next half hour. I am so happy to be joined by Dahi Wolf, the Senior Early Education Analyst at Kids Forward in Wisconsin. Our topic today is childcare. The harsh realities are this. If you are able to even find a childcare center for your child, it is likely to be costing you somewhere in the extraordinary ballpark of just shy of $3,000 a month. I'm not even going to talk about babies. They're more expensive. And with the state now debating the biennial budget, Republicans in the state house are looking to basically cut off the support for child care counts, which were, in essence, government subsidies to help keep child care affordable. You know, if you want people working because work is dignified. My goodness, if you are a single working parent with a child that you need to place into child care, and the bill for that is $2,300 a month, $2,800 a month, or more, how are you going to afford that? It is simply a crippling level of expense. Dahi, am I describing what we've got going on here correctly? I mean, this is a child care crisis in Wisconsin as it stands today, and it's about to get worse if the Joint Finance Committee and GOP response to Governor Evers' budget moves forward and becomes our biennial budget.
You are entirely correct. Child care is in crisis. Child care has been in crisis for a long time. But the crisis is really reaching a cliff coming up at the end of June when the funding runs out that has supported child care providers all over the state to stay in business. This funding started back during the pandemic. And amazingly, Wisconsin had a system in place and was able to get those funds out so quickly and so efficiently that there were research and surveys done that showed that Wisconsin had less childcare closings than almost any other state in the country because of the efficiency and the effectiveness of this program. And we want that program to continue under whatever name. It can no longer be called that because the Joint Finance took that out of the budget. But we know that Wisconsin working families deserve support. We know that childcare providers deserve support. And like you said, how are we going to have a strong economy and families being able to go to work without safe, reliable, affordable childcare?
Folks, that's Dahi Wolf, Senior Early Education Analyst at Kids Forward. So what you're telling me is we have had a program that has been extraordinarily effective at least keeping childcare somewhat available and affordable. And instead of investing more into that program to make childcare more affordable and more available, we're staring down the double barrel of it potentially being gutted. I've heard estimates, and tell me if I'm wrong, that in some counties, they may be looking at reductions in childcare centers and open slots, available slots, of upwards of 50, 60, 70%. What's that going to do to a local economy in counties facing that kind of level of closure?
I don't even want to think about it. I mean, that is just horrific. And we have a way to prevent that. We have billions in surplus in our budget right now that could be spent to help Wisconsin families to fund K-12 education, to fund our childcare system. And instead, we're looking at tax cuts. And I just think that's immoral, to say the least. And it's also backwards thinking. I mean, our state motto is forward. We should be thinking about how we can support every working family, every mother, every father, every childcare provider, every business that wants to keep their employees. I mean, we know from the business community, they've been saying this now for years and years, and it keeps coming closer and closer to like their top priority in terms of, you know, recruitment and being able to, have employees and be able to, work, have their business at full capacity. And it's just, especially in rural areas, but also in urban areas, it's just become a huge barrier to, you know, to employment and keeping our economy strong. We have, I'm going to give you another statistic.
I love them. I'm a nerd.
Yeah. For many, many years, Wisconsin has been one of the top five states in terms of women's participation in the workforce. And of course, because we live in a patriarchal society where women are expected to be the caregivers and the, you know, the mothers of, and the, you know, taking, they're the ones that have to make sure the kids are, are safe and sound. You know, in order for those women to participate, you know, most of the time they need to have, like I said, safe, reliable, affordable childcare. And if we don't have that, then we're turning our back on all those folks that, you know, that want to be out in the workforce and are not given a choice.
Folks, again, this is Dahi Wolf, Senior Early Education Analyst at Kids Forward. So it is pro-business to support childcare. It is also, as I understand things, Dahi, an incredible ROI. To have a vibrant workforce so employers can get butts into the chairs or on the lines that they need, this is essential. But it's also an element of early childhood education, which I believe you're a wee bit of an expert in, Dahi.
Sure.
Childcare is early childhood education. It helps get kids moving in the right direction. And we know that investments in education return 3, 4, 5-fold for a taxpayer dollar. Tell us more.
Yeah, I mean, I could spend the next hour talking about why it's important to invest in childcare. Not just for the economic gains, but of course for, you know, the quality of life and the, you know, the abilities that it gives kids to have that really, really strong start. I mean, if you talk about neurological development, you talk about motor skills, you talk about, you know, mental health, all the things that kids need to, you know, to really start out well and have a contribute to society, start out in those first 5 years. I mean, they're just key, especially those first 3 years. And like you mentioned earlier, that's the most expensive time for kids to be in childcare because, you know, when they're smaller and younger, it takes more adults to take care of them and to make sure that they're, you know, thriving and growing. So the research you mentioned, there was a from the University of Chicago, a famous economist, Heckman, who has studied this for, gosh, now 40, 50 years and seen the long-term effects of these investments in terms of the benefits to society. It's everything from high school graduation to longer lives to more home ownership, tax paying, less involvement with the criminal justice system. I mean, it's just every single box you want to check. My organization, Kids Forward, also does a lot of work in the area of juvenile justice and trying to, you know, make things better in our state. And we've often used the statistic to compare the cost of early childhood education and the cost of incarcerating a youth. And when I first started in this work about 20 years ago, I remember, you know, just the astronomical figure of saying, well, it costs about $10,000 to $12,000 a year for a quality childcare slot. It's about $75,000 to incarcerate a youth. Well, I was just told the other day that is now up to almost $1 million a year. I think it's $875,000 to incarcerate a youth. And don't we think it's a much better investment to, you know, to help those kids and help those families?
Yeah, it's the business justification, if we can talk about lives in such a callous, right, and purely economic terms. We know if we look at Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake, the lack of success we have, even if you're talking about those juveniles that need and have to interact with the legal system, those models of how we've done it, it's not community-based, it's not education-focused, it does not work, and it is cripplingly expensive for Wisconsin taxpayers, and it's not producing the results that people would want to see. So why I don't understand the case against the investment in childcare. And folks, you're going to want to stick around because Dahi's going to be with me through the next segment. We got a big event coming up that we're going to tell you about on the other side. But Dahi, I tax breaks to what end and for whom? to me, I struggle with the idea of the tax breaks that are being discussed. I am always for tax breaks for middle class working people. I am always for tax incentives and tax breaks for small businesses. I am not for tax breaks for the wealthiest among us who can already afford to pay for whatever child care they want. Probably a live-in stinking nanny who, you know, they don't have to have two parents working. I don't understand this. It is not going to help working families to decimate our child care system in favor of tax cuts that will accrue to the benefit of the very few on the backs of the very many. What's the justification for the cuts?
I don't even want to go there. It just doesn't make any sense. It doesn't. It means we don't care about Wisconsin working families. We don't care about the future. We're only willing to see a very short term and not, like I said, the long term, 40 years, 30, 40, even 10 years down the road, we would see benefits. And also, I want to point out that Wisconsin has been short-sighted in this area for a long, long time. In fact, even under Democratic and Republican administrations, depending on the nature, of course, too, because it's been divided. But we as a state are actually put the least amount of money from our general revenue into childcare of any state in the whole country. So we basically say,
wait a minute, Dahi, say that again, please, okay. Really clearly and yeah. Slowly,
sure.
So the yeah. folks yeah. in the back row can hear
yeah,
you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we as a state in our budget and our tax money, the GPR, general purpose revenue, we basically put in the least amount of any of the 50 states into supporting childcare in our state. And that's been true historically for a very long time. We do put the very, very minimum in just to be able to get the federal match so we can draw down those dollars. But we have basically ridden the backs of the, of our federal subsidies this, for decades to keep our system afloat. And it was the same, like I said, in the last, since the pandemic with the childcare counts and the rescue money. That money actually ran out 2 years ago, but the governor was able to be very creative and very insistent. And we joke that he looked for, under the couch cushions and found yes. $330 million. And basically he went to every agency head all the state agencies and said, do you have any extra? Because this is my priority. And he made it happen. And we got 2 years extra. And now that 2 years is over.
Child care funding running out in Wisconsin, not in a year, not in 6 months, at the end of June. What are we going to do? How do you get involved? Our conversation continues on the other side with Dahi Wolf, senior early education analyst at Kids Forward. Find more about Kids Forward at kidsforward.org. I'm Maggie Dawn. Keep it locked right here. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Have you and your family had this discussion? Honey, should we have kids? Well, how much is childcare going to cost? Have you put pen to paper and done the math and been blown away? Do you know that childcare in this state costs more than in-state tuition does at the University of Wisconsin-Madison? I'm going to say that again. For one kid, it costs more to put one child in childcare, in early childcare education, than it does to send your college-age student to the University of Wisconsin-Madison. It doesn't have to be this way. It shouldn't be this way. But after decades of neglect, the MAGA regime in state government is threatening to make it so much very, very worse for working people. It seems to me that their solution is, get rich quick Otherwise, you're screwed in almost every way, shape, and form when it comes to supporting working families. I've got a great guest with me. His name is Dahi Wolf, Senior Early Education Analyst at Kids Forward. You can find out more about Kids Forward at kidsforward.org. Dahi, we've got a big event coming up if people want to get involved and make their voice heard on this issue. Tell us more about that.
I will. And Maggie, just before I pivot, I just need to say one really important thing that we haven't even gotten to, which is that even though childcare is, like you said, just astronomically expensive, we still have a workforce that is severely underpaid. And the average hourly rate for a childcare provider in Wisconsin is still somewhere around, $10, $11, $12. You can go work at Quick Trip for, much more. And so it shows, how we prioritize our kids. And childcare is not a system that can operate on its own. It's not economically feasible like running a restaurant or, a business. It is something that in every other industrialized Western country is part, just like healthcare, is part of the system and the infrastructure because those countries prioritize children and families. I mean, they also have paid parental leave and, lots of other things. But I just want to point that out, that even, solving this problem and keeping these programs afloat, we still have a severe crisis in terms of the workforce and how they're paid. And of course, you probably know that well over 95% of the workforce in the country and in the state is female. So we've talked about mothers going back to work. We've talked about the childcare workforce. It's time to talk about dads. Dads care about childcare too, even if they aren't as obviously involved. And we feel like it's time to celebrate that, to have these unlikely champions speak up, and to really just create a movement of saying that this is not just a women's issue. This is not just about mothers and caretakers who are female, and that we want to expand that to this voices that haven't been heard. I've been in this field close to 20 years. I was in elementary school teaching before that. And I don't believe there's ever been any kind of event at the Capitol that is specifically focused on dads and childcare. So Kids Forward, my organization, came up with this plan to have an event that's just a few days before Father's Day. So it's 2 weeks from tomorrow. It's called Dads Care for Childcare. And it's going to be up at the Capitol at 12 noon on Wednesday, June 11th. We're going to start out in the rotunda and have kind of a rally, a short gathering to kind of get us fired up. And then we'll move over to the assembly parlor where we're planning to have a panel discussion. We've reached out to both Democratic and GOP legislators who are dads to be able to come and speak to this issue, both from a personal level and from what they're hearing from their constituents and their role as a lawmaker and a decision maker about where our taxpayer funds are going to go and are they going to go to support families and their needs.
Yeah, when I think about this, and folks, again, it is Dads Care for Child Care Wednesday, June 11th from 12 to 1 p.m. It starts in the rotunda. You can find out more at kidsforward.org. It occurs to me, Dahi, that budgets are in so many ways an expression of our collective morals, our collective values, and that it is simply untrue for someone to stand up and say, I believe in the dignity of work and I support families, and in the next breath, vote to gut the system that helps bring childcare and at least make it somewhat accessible and somewhat affordable for Wisconsin families. Those are simply not compatible concepts.
I 100% agree. It's a moral document. And it's not only that, it's economically sensible. We have the money. It's not like we have almost a $4 billion budget. The ask for supporting the childcare for the next 2 years is $480 billion. I'm sorry. Whoops. $480 million.
Right.
Much smaller. So not even half a billion dollars out of that surplus. So And I just want to give a quick shout out before we run out of time, which is that we have some great partners that are working with us on this. And I just want to give them a shout out. And there's more joining as we speak. We have the Black Child Development Institute, the Main Street Alliance, the Milwaukee Succeeds, the Hmong Institute, One City Schools, and others. So just want to say this is a collaborative effort.
Collaborative effort. When I come back as an economist, I'm going to give you a little explainer on why wages for childcare workers are so freaking stinking stickily low, and that the solution to that problem isn't, well, just anybody who wants to volunteer to show up at a childcare center and take care of your kids. That is not the solution here. I'm going to discuss that and other things in the big, brutal bill and their impact specifically on Wisconsinites when we come back. Big thank you to you, Dahi Wolf, Senior Early Education Analyst at Kids Forward. Keep it locked. We'll be right back.
Thank you, Maggie.
Chew! What a fantastic set of guests, making all of us a little smarter together here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Big, big thanks to Angela Lang of Block, Jeff Mandel, and John Frankie, who helped file a lawsuit to help bring more choices to Wisconsin voters. And last but certainly not least, big thanks to Dahi Wolf, the Senior Early Education Analyst at Kids Forward. Again, they've got that big event coming up, Dad's Care for Child Care, Wednesday, June 11th, starting at noon, right in the Capitol Rotunda in Madison. Be there or be square or circular, as it was, rotundas generally circular. Folks, welcome back. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I wanted to give you a little read about why salaries in childcare are so cruddy. And the reason is that childcare, if you view it as a profit-making business, is not particularly profitable. And that's because you have families that need childcare all up and down the income strata, which means that as prices increase, people simply can't afford it, so they would literally drop out of the workforce rather than pay for it. And so where demand can be sticky, there is kind of a price ceiling, because it's not like people have an unending amount of resource that they can simply reallocate from other essential needs into childcare. So we've heard from Republicans frequently that the solution to the childcare problem is get rid of all those pesky regulations about who can provide childcare. I don't know about you, but there might be some tweaks that can be made to the regulatory scheme around childcare, but it ain't going to get anywhere near close to solving the problem. We need more childcare providers, but people don't want to enter the business because it has very thin profit margins, if you can even squeak one out at all, because this isn't a profit-making designed business. It is a human necessity. And meanwhile, people don't have like a never-ending bucket of resources to continue to pay more and more and more and more and more for childcare. So the needs don't go away because prices go up. You get what I'm saying? It's not like, oh, well, I'll buy this artisanal loaf of bread for like an extraordinary price, or I'll buy Wonder Bread because it's a nickel, right? Like, that's not how childcare works. And in general, as childcare prices go up, it's not like there's the super cheap option. There is some price differentiation, but in general, it's crushingly expensive. So from an economics perspective, this is like the perfect storm of factors coming together to make it so very hard for working families, especially working families right on the edge. If you're making over $200,000 a year, total household income, $300,000, the higher up the income strata you go, the better off Republican Party policies are for you. It just is. But if you are barely making it by, barely making do, the biennial budget that's being considered in Wisconsin right now, after Republican cuts, MAGA regime cuts, when we look at the brutal bill that House Republicans just passed on the Hill, everything is going to get much, much harder for families that are just making it work. So it's completely intellectually inconsistent for Republicans to say, I support families. I want people to embrace the dignity of work, to bootstrap themselves out of their current economic condition. And by the way, I'll make everything that working families need to survive more expensive by every policy and every budget that we pass. Just doesn't work like that. Childcare is an extraordinary example that's going to have immediate results that will start to hit after the end of June. And tomorrow, I might go back into all the statistics about the distributional impacts of the brutal budget reconciliation bill. But suffice it to say, the poorest among us, their effective income is going to go down, annual income will go down by about $1,000 a year. And the top 0.1%, their incomes will go up by $4.3 million a year. Let's just take those two extremes. Top 0.1%, their incomes under the Republican brutal bill go up $4.3 million a year, because the top 0.1%, they really need that extra $4.3 million. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's putting them right on the edge. Whereas the poorest among us are going to lose $1,000 a year. That doesn't make any sense. And so while it's true on a very nominal or surface level, when we look at what Wisconsin Republicans have been saying about their support for the brutal bill that will hurt working families, it will hurt our elders that are in nursing home care. Over 70% of those folks in Wisconsin rely on Medicaid. It's going to make it worse for everybody. Yes, there will be tax reductions. Yes, it will avoid a large tax increase. But the question should never be those simple surface level issues. Is it a tax increase or decrease? Because who cares at a certain level? And I don't mean that flippantly. I care who gets the tax increase, who gets the tax decrease. It should matter who. It shouldn't just be a question of increasing or decreasing taxes. It should matter what the combination of these policies are doing to Wisconsin families. And if you approach it from that standpoint, who wins, who loses, who benefits, who pays more? Republicans can't speak at that level because the MAGA regime in this brutal bill and the Wisconsin biennial budget are privileging the very, very few, the richest among us, and burdening the rest of us. So I do care about whether or not it's a tax increase or decrease. But my statement is I care who is paying more or less taxes and who ends up better or worse off as a result of the bill. Who definitely matters. And when we get down to that level, there's no argument that Republicans can rely on. They can't do the analysis at that level at all. They'll just say, oh, the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, whose job it is literally to do these analyses, oh, they're just wrong. Or in the state, the nonpartisan Legislative Research Bureau, they're just wrong. That's just ignore that. Don't pay any attention to the man behind the curtains. So here are some brass tax realities about the brutalness of the MAGA regime's budget reconciliation bill. And I'm going to talk about it not as a budget reconciliation bill, but is the single largest transfer of wealth from the middle class to the top 1% that our country has seen in history. Yeah, it's a tax reduction. Yep, we're avoiding tax increases, but it is the single largest transfer of wealth from working people to the richest among us that our country has seen in history. Here are the facts as they relate to Wisconsin. You want to get in on this discussion, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. According to the Kaiser Family Foundation, 1.3 Medicaid recipients in the state of Wisconsin, that's 1 in 5 Wisconsinites. 4 in 10 births rely on Medicaid in this state. 1 in 3 children rely on Medicaid. 1 in 3 Wisconsin residents with disability. 1 in 6 Medicare beneficiaries in the state of Wisconsin also receive Medicaid support. 4 in 7 Wisconsin nursing home residents rely on Medicaid. Nearly 85,000 Wisconsin residents will lose their health care coverage because of the cruelty of the MAGA regime. The state, us taxpayers here, are going to lose nearly $500 million in federal Medicaid dollars. 70%, and here's the kicker. They keep talking about work requirements for Medicaid, work requirements for Medicaid, work requirements for Medicaid. As soon as someone, a MAGA regime spokesperson, says that to you, here's the response. 70% of non-disabled adult Medicaid enrollees already work. Let's say that again, because these are the statistics that drive me absolutely bananas. 70% of Medicaid, non-disabled adult Medicaid recipients already work. Of all total Medicaid recipients, I'm talking nationwide, 45% of them are already working full-time. So this whole thing about work requirements, what it is red tape requirements to shove people off of Medicaid that legitimately qualify for it. That's what's going on. 855-752-4842. I'm going to go to the phones. Want to drop a couple more statistics for all of you. The Wisconsin Department of Human Services estimates that these new red tape requirements will cost taxpayers, the administration of the red tape itself is going to cost each and every one of you that pay taxes in Wisconsin $66 million a year additional. It's going to strip healthcare from 52,000 otherwise eligible Wisconsinites. It just gets worse. Okay, let's talk about emergency food assistance. Here's what's going to happen in Wisconsin because of the brutal MAGA regime's budget reconciliation bill. It's going to cost Wisconsin taxpayers $314 million more a year, and 90,000 people are at risk of losing emergency food assistance. What? Oh, and the gutting of the Affordable Care Act. Yes, yes, yes. That little piece that they threw in there. During the last open enrollment period, a record number of Wisconsinites enrolled via the ACA, over 300,000. All of that going to be put in jeopardy. Let's go to the phones, 855-752-4842. Ross from Crawford County. Welcome. What would you like to say, sir?
Hey, Maggie. Thanks for the show. Thanks for giving me a chance to talk. I think that the Republicans, I'm trying to understand how the Republicans get away with doing this. And I think they've learned something, and that lesson I think goes way back to Walker and probably before. And I think it's such that the people that, when I think of the roughly 40% of people who are not voting, when you have things like Medicare, Medicaid, and such, these people that are relying on Medicaid, these people that are needing extra help for childcare, may be the same people who aren't voting.
Ross from Crawford County, are the folks getting the benefits the folks that aren't voting? We're going to pick back up with that question on the other side. Keep it locked. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network, 855-752-4842. I'm Maggie Dawn.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Just got a wee bit of feedback on the text line. One of our regular listeners saying, it sounds like the same topic frequently, Maggie. And my response to our dear texter, my friend Mark, hello, Mark, was, yeah, if it sounds like we're talking about the same stuff on repeat, it's because it is. It is different versions of the same problem over and over and over again. And let's be clear. I know that I talk about Donald Trump as a unique and especially threatening political actor. But Donald Trump is just the acute current expression of what has been GOP policy since Ronald Reagan. And that is less taxes for the rich, gutting programs that help the middle class, and letting the chips fall where they may. That has been the mainstay of all Republican economic policy since Ronald Reagan. He ran on it and won twice. Now, there have been little softenings of that from time to time from different Republicans because, of course, they need to win elections. But the reality is that this has been the playbook. Donald Trump has metastasized it, accelerated it, and brought all of the garbage to the fore. But the reality is, this is Republicanism. Everything else is smokescreen, distraction, and window dressing so that no one in the middle class, working people, and by the way, I'm considering working people, like basically if you're not clearing in a household like less than $500K a year, you're a working stiff. Hate to break it to you. They've got their hand in the middle class's pocket. It has been there since 1980. It ain't going anywhere. They distract people by saying, it's a tax cut. It might look like one, but it's not going to operate like one for regular people. Full stop. Now, our friend Ross from Crawford County asked me, is it possible that the folks that benefit from things like emergency food assistance, Medicare, Medicaid, maybe some of the people that stayed home? And the answer to that question is yes, of course, because participation in these programs is widespread. It's the majority of people in nursing homes. But how easy have Republicans made it for people in nursing homes to vote? I'll give you a hint. They haven't made it any easier. Why do you think Republicans over the last 40 years, 50 years even, have attacked the mechanisms that make it easier for working people to vote if you're working two jobs? Why are we voting on Tuesdays and not Saturdays? Why is it harder for students to vote? Why can't you use your student ID to vote? Why did they fight letting people gather ballots properly witnessed from nursing homes during COVID? Why do you think all of this is? I'm going to take a break and take a breath and welcome one of our good friends to the show, L.A. Tom. L.A. Tom, always great to see you on my caller list. How are you, sir? What you got to say?
Hey, Maggie, I'm great. First, we the people ultimately are the government. We must never forget that. And second, we must get money out of politics. One thing I think that needs to be said is there's a lot of people out there, for some reason, that are making $70,000, $80,000 that think they're so rich. And when you take the different indices in Wisconsin of $16,000 for childcare, $16,000 for healthcare, $16,000 for mortgage or rent, and $16,000 for taxes, I think we really need to, like when you were giving all the different stats, we really need to identify dollar amount-wise what is considered middle class, because I consider it probably $70,000 to over $100,000, $150,000 maybe, because I think a lot of people out there think that, oh my gosh, I got a little money in my bank. I guess that means I'm rich. No, you're not. If we're cutting Medicaid and Medicare and all that stuff, I always say I am closer to the poorest person and the homeless person on the street making over $100,000 than I am to the billionaire. And I hope everyone really thinks about that and thinks about how close they would be to being on the street and where they are in comparison to that person versus the billionaire. Because you're not even close to the billionaire. Even if you're making $1 million, you're still not close to the billionaire. Thanks, Maggie.
Yeah, thanks so much, Tom. Everything Tom just said times two. Unless you got, I'm going to say, upwards of at least 5 mil plus, if you're talking generational wealth, 30 mil plus, it would take one job loss for a prolonged period of time to potentially bankrupt your family. If you got kids in childcare or in private school, or you can't send them to your publics, whatever it is, one prolonged job loss. And by that, I mean 6 months or more. That's all it would take. And unless you can look at your personal finances and be like, yeah, I'm fine 6 months or more with your major bread earner and your breadwinner in your family without a job, we're talking about you. Folks, we have two fabulous guests tomorrow because we got to keep digging into this. It might be repetitive, but this is where the action is. The robbery of the middle class, reverse Robin Hood. We've got Michael Negron, former special assistant to the President of the United States for Economic Policy. He's going to join me tomorrow at 5. At 4 o'clock, I got Bobby Kogan, Senior Director of Federal Budget Policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund, talking about the cuts to emergency food assistance. We're going to keep going here because bringing the information to every single one of you and talking about it together is how we make this better. Oh, yeah, and that voting thing. That's going to do it for me on this Tuesday edition. Go Brewers! I'll be at the game tonight. I hope to see you there. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together for the middle class.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.